The biggest scandal in the history of America.
Mr. Reagan.
About a week ago, Michael Schellenberger, Matt Taibbi, and Alex Guttentag dropped a bombshell news story that exposed a ton of stuff about the efforts of the deep state to steal the 2016 election. A lot of this stuff has come out slowly over the years, but these guys collected it into one big story and included some new stuff that is pretty earth-shattering. At about the same time, Tucker Carlson interviewed a gentleman by the name of Mike Benz. Mike Benz is the executive director of the Foundation for Freedom Online. And in the Tucker interview, this man exposed an overarching effort by the powers that be within the United States government to censor me. Me and other YouTubers, prominent figures on Twitter and Facebook, and all independent journalists and political pundits who have been trying to get the truth out. That interview was also earth-shattering, and it illuminates a lot of the background of the efforts to keep Trump out of office. The Schellenberger-Taibbi-Guttentag story broke about a week ago, and I expected it to blow up, but it didn't. And I suspect it might be because it's all such a complicated story, it's difficult to digest. But I've gone through all the stuff I can find about this, and I've read through it several times to try to get all of this straight in my head, and I think that I've compiled a pretty comprehensive yet easily consumable breakdown of everything. And what's more, I think it dovetails perfectly with the now viral Mike Benz Tucker Carlson interview. And finally, I have a resolution. I have a vision for how all of this ends, and it's a very satisfying conclusion. So guys, watch this one all the way to the end. I promise it's worth it. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the biggest scandal in the history of America. Our own intelligence services tried to circumvent the democratic process here in America. They tried to undermine our presidential election and to install their own puppet president, Hillary Clinton. And I'm going to drop the biggest bombshell right here at the top of the show. This effort was spearheaded by three key figures: CIA Director John Brennan, the would-be puppet herself, Hillary Clinton, and none other than the President of the United States of America, Barack Obama. Even more scandalous is the mentality of the deep state today, because I now believe that the deep state is not merely made up of greedy, power-hungry megalomaniacs, but rather a mix of greedy, power-hungry megalomaniacs and a lot of very powerful narcissists. And these powerful narcissists truly believe that they're doing good. You see, there are people out there in positions of great power who are absolutely convinced that they are so important to maintaining the global order and peace and prosperity in the world that without their total control, everything would just collapse. They believe that if their hands come off the steering wheel of that global order, the civilization as we know it will careen right off a cliff. And so all of this begins with a philosophical shift in the powers that be, a shift from a belief in democracy to oligarchy. But the trick is in the rhetoric. You see, they have simply redefined democracy. They've taken the traditional definition of oligarchy, a small privileged group that wields total control, often for their own corrupt or selfish purposes. They've taken this definition and they simply applied it to the word democracy.
The whole push after the 2016 election and after Brexit was to completely invert everything that we described as being the underpinnings of a democratic society in order to deal with the threat of free speech on the internet. And what they essentially said is, we need to redefine democracy from being about the will of the voters to being about the sanctity of democratic institutions. And who are the democratic institutions? Oh, it's us. You know, it's the military, it's NATO, it's the IMF and the World Bank, it's the mainstream media, it is the NGOs. It's essentially all of the elite establishments that were under threat from the rise of domestic populism that declared their own consensus to be the new definition of democracy. Because if you define democracy as being the strength of democratic institutions, rather than a focus on the will of the voters, then democracy is just the consensus building architecture within the democratic institutions themselves. From their perspective, that's democracy. Democracy is getting the NGOs to agree with BlackRock, to agree with the Wall Street Journal. That is the difficult vote building process from their perspective. If at the end of the day, a bunch of, you know, populist groups decide that they like a truck driver who's popular on TikTok more than the carefully constructed consensus of the NATO military brass, well, then from their perspective, that is now an attack on democracy. And this has fundamentally changed the nature of American governance because of the threat of one small voice becoming popular on social media.
This new philosophy totally justifies in the minds of the agents of the deep state, the corrupt politicians, and the intelligence community, the subversion of democracy, the blatant violation of the free speech rights of American citizens, and the stealing of American elections. This is a very profound shift, and it actually explains the threat to our democracy that they keep prattling on about.
Donald Trump and the MAGA Republicans represent an extremism that threatens the very foundations of our republic.
This MAGA threat is a threat to the brick and mortar of our democratic institutions.
They're a threat to our very democracy.
The range of possible threats that he poses to our democracy is truly quite mind-boggling.
The former president's actions represented a unique and existential threat to our democracy.
Donald Trump is a threat to our democracy.
And a threat to America's democracy.
Threats to American democracy.
He is a threat to democracy.
That is a threat to democracy.
Trump's threat to democracy is now systemic.
Donald Trump and the movement he has encouraged are a threat to democracy.
He is the greatest threat to democracy.
And threats to American democracy.
He poses the gravest threat to democracy that we've ever seen.
He is threatening our democracy.
I think that could be the end of our democracy. If he were, or someone of his ilk, were once again to be elected president, you will not recognize our country.
If you define democracy as that small privileged group that wields total control over America, well then, yeah, Trump supporters are indeed a threat to that democracy. But of course, that's not democracy, is it? And now some of you are in the comments already, and you guys are writing out, we're not a democracy, we're a constitutional republic. And okay, yes, I agree with you. But for the purposes of this discussion, it's important to use the term democracy, because as much as you may hate it, for many years, this was the term that everyone in America used to describe our system of government. We referred to it as a representative democracy, as opposed to a direct democracy, but we just used the term democracy and everybody knew what we meant. And it's important to use this term here because it is the transition from the definition that we were using to the definition that they are now using that is of concern to us here. Because democracy used to mean, in America, to most people, democracy used to mean representatives chosen by the people. And the deep state now has adopted the definition of a government chosen by the deep state. So according to Mike Benz, this philosophical shift was brought about by people like me. Now, I didn't have a YouTube channel back then, so I can't personally take credit for this, unfortunately. But guys like Steven Crowder, Ben Shapiro, Alex Jones, love him or hate him, they are the reason for this shift. Basically, the deep state realized that they could no longer control U.S. elections through traditional news media, and they had to find a way to control social media in order to keep their hands on the steering wheel of the global order. Now, this Mike Benz guy, he's pretty dry, but I've cut the interview down to the relevant bits, and so I implore you to watch it because I think this is critical to understand why the deep state felt justified in subverting democracy, as they like to call it. Listen to this.
2016 was really the first time that social media had reached such maturity that it began to eclipse legacy media as a uncensored, mature ecosystem allowed citizen journalists and independent voices to be able to outcompete legacy news media. This induced a massive crisis both in our military and in our State Department and intelligence services. Free speech on the internet was an instrument of statecraft almost from the outset. Now, the high watermark of the sort of internet free speech moment was the Arab Spring in 2011, 2012, when you had this one by one, all of the adversary governments of the Obama administration, Egypt, Tunisia, all began to be toppled in Facebook revolutions and Twitter revolutions. And you had the State Department working very closely with the social media companies to be able to keep social media online during those periods. Now, at the time, NATO was publishing white papers saying that the biggest threat NATO faces is not actually a military invasion from Russia. It's losing domestic elections across Europe to all these right-wing populist groups. An industry had been created that spanned the Pentagon, the British Ministry of Defense, and Brussels to censor Russian propaganda or to censor domestic right-wing populist groups in Europe who were rising in political power at the time because of the migrant crisis. When Brexit happened in 2016, that was this crisis moment. They made the argument, now the entire rules-based international order would collapse unless the military took control over media, because Brexit would give rise to Frexit in France with Marine Le Pen, to Spexit in Spain with the Vox Party, to Italexit in Italy, to Grexit in Germany, to Grexit in Greece. the EU would come apart, so NATO would be killed without a single bullet being fired. And then not only that, now that NATO's gone, now there's no enforcement arm for the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, or the World Bank. So now the financial stakeholders who depend on the battering ram of the national security state would basically be helpless against governments around the world. So from their perspective, if the military did not begin to censor the internet, all of the democratic institutions and infrastructure that gave rise to the modern world after World War II would collapse. Brexit was June 2016. The very next month at the Warsaw Conference, NATO formally amended its charter to this explicit capacity building for censoring tweets if they were deemed to be Russian proxies. And again, it's not just Russian propaganda. These were now Brexit groups or groups like Matteo Salvini in Italy or in Greece or in Germany or in Spain with the Vox Party. But essentially, there was no moral quandary at first with respect to the creation of the censorship industry when it started out in Germany and in Lithuania and Latvia and Estonia and in Sweden and Finland. There began to be a more diplomatic debate about it after Brexit, and then it became full throttle when Trump was elected. And what little resistance there was washed over by the rise and saturation of Russiagate, which basically allowed them to not have to deal with the moral ambiguities of censoring your own people, because if Trump was a Russian asset, you no longer really had a traditional free speech issue, it was a national security issue.
So the powers that be, the narcissists and the megalomaniacs, they decided that this new populism, supercharged by social media, was such a grave threat to their control that they needed to take unprecedented measures in the United States to maintain their power. They took the statecraft that they used to topple foreign regimes and they pointed it inward, domestically, against their own people. This was, of course, illegal. But as I said, they had developed a new philosophy, redefining the word democracy to morally justify what they were doing in their own minds. And in order to steal an election, these sinister actors, they needed the cooperation of a lot of other less sinister people, the useful idiots. And these useful idiots needed to be convinced that what they were doing was right. The powers that be needed to give all those working with them the moral flexibility to completely ignore the Constitution and basically do whatever they wanted. And they did it. They convinced thousands of people throughout the US government, in foreign governments, and throughout the news media that they were totally justified in trying to sabotage the Trump campaign and attempting to install their chosen puppet, Hillary Clinton. Now, if you don't know why the deep state chose Hillary Clinton, Patrick Byrne explained it in an interview a few years ago.
I bribed Hillary Clinton $18 million. I facilitated a bribe for Hillary Clinton on January 14, 2016, right here in this town. Hillary, on behalf of the FBI, they came to me around December 1st, 2015. They told me Hillary Clinton had accepted a bribe from Turkey for $20 million. They told me that I would be working for a group in New York, FBI agents, who had authorization to set Hillary Clinton up in a sting. They asked me to facilitate a bribe for her, an $18 million bribe from another government. The bagman from that other government, I was to befriend, and I was to get that person 10 minutes alone in a room with Hillary Clinton. I did. On January 14th, 2016, Hillary Clinton was in this town, and she met in a way that was kept off her schedule. She accepted an $18 million bribe. But General Barr knows this. This is the Durham. They know this was what is behind it all. They came to me 3 days later and told me I had to forget about it and forget that it ever happened. And I said, what are you talking about? And they gave me one excuse. They said, Hillary's going to win, and it's been determined, it's been decided upstairs, nothing's going to be able to stop that now. So she's going to win, and she's going to send her people over to the FBI and ask who was part of investigating Hillary, and any of us who were part of it are going to be destroyed, and that includes you too, Patrick. And so this mission has been scrubbed from the highest level. And I thought about that, and I said, yes, sir, and I came. But two or three weeks later, I was back with three federal agents this time, And I let them know that wasn't sitting, and this is in Salt Lake City, Utah, and that wasn't sitting well with me, and I'd like to know why. We had almost a year before the election. They could have had me and another person in front of a grand jury in a week and gotten her indicted. They told me, this is word for word, Patrick, what's really going on is this. President Obama has his people across the federal bureaucracy at this point, but especially the Department of Justice. Hillary Clinton is going to be president for 8 years, and nothing's going to change that. But think of there being a Bunsen burner within the Department of Justice. That evidence about the two bribes you were part of gathering is going to be sitting on the Bunsen burner. And the hand on the Bunsen burner is going to be one of Barack Obama's people. If Hillary's a good girl and defends Obamacare, that flame stays low. If she's a bad girl and thinks for herself, it's going to get turned up high. That way, Barack Obama is going to manage Hillary Clinton for the 8 years she's president, and then she's going to step down, and Michelle's going to run. And Patrick, that's the plan. That came out of the lips of a federal agent. It was confirmed to me this spring. The Durham investigation has that plan was called the Operation Snow Globe. That was Brennan Obama's name for it. They were trying to get Hillary to step into a snow globe. I'm looking for a prop. A snow globe that anytime they wanted, they could then pick up and shake for 8 years.
And that's why they wanted her installed as president. She would be their puppet. And that is why all of this happened. John Brennan was instructed by Barack Obama to sabotage the Trump campaign. And as soon as he was given that order, it all began. Journalists often say that a political scandal is bigger than Watergate. This one actually is bigger than Watergate, way bigger.
This story is similar to Watergate. I would actually venture to say it's far more serious. We had the CIA involved. We have the FBI involved. We have the National Security Council. We have the White House. It wasn't something that they hid. It was something that they did in plain view.
When Barack Obama gave the order to John Brennan, that is when this all started. A list was compiled of Trump associates to bump. Now, I'd never heard the term bump before this report came out, but apparently this means to make contact with or manipulate, to bump into. According to General Michael Flynn, who was interviewed for the Schellenberger-Taibbi-Gutentag story, quote, bumping has all kinds of techniques. The purpose is to get compromising material on them in order to do something with them, use them in some capacity, or just to achieve a political end. Now, according to the Schellenberger-Taibbi-Gutentag story, this list of bump targets included 26 Trump associates, but according to Dan Bongino, who independently acquired his own list, it included 28 Trump associates.
Now, those 26 names, folks, I've never shown you this before, and I debated showing it to you now. My list is more than 26 names. I'm obviously not going to tell you who I got this from, but the list of people to bump and target with, you know, Russian interaction and spying, put it on the screen. I've never shown you this before. This is from my source, Ted Cruz. Donald Trump, Ben Carson. Some of the names are not spelled right. It's for a reason I can't describe. Maybe going to it a different time. Don Trump Jr., Eric, Ivanka, Lara Trump, Melania, Jared Kushner, Jason Miller, Dave Bossi, Sam Clovis, Paul Manafort, Jason Johnson, Carter Page, Papadopoulos, Alice Stewart, Victoria Coates, Christopher Bourne, Jason Osborne, Chris Christie, Don McGahn, Michael Cohen, Michael Flynn, Alexander Jones, Jeff Sessions, Rudy Giuliani, Roger Stone. That's the list I was given of people they were targeted.
Now, John Brennan knew that what he was doing was totally illegal. And so Brennan set up an elaborate plot whereby his fingerprints would not be found on any of this. And so Brennan's first step was to bring in foreign intelligence services to spy on Trump associates. That's right, Brennan used foreign intelligence agencies. These are the agencies from the UK, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. And when you include us, the United States, this alliance is known as the Five Eyes. But the reason for the use of foreign intelligence services, as I understand it, is particularly sinister, because Brennan knew, as I said, that what he was doing was completely illegal. And even if he were to get a FISA warrant to do these things properly, which probably he could not have been able to do, as he had no legitimate predicate for this, but if he were to be able to do this, he would have had to report all of it to Congress. Congress has oversight on the operations of the CIA. So the reason that Brennan outsourced this job to the Foreign Intelligence Services was to hide it from Congress. That's it. He was trying to hide it. According to the Schellenberger-Taibbi-Gutentag story, the first target was Michael Flynn in March of 2016. For this, they brought in the now famous CIA operative Stefan Halper, who was paid, according to this article, $411,575 for his services in 2016, eventually bumping four Trump associates. Incidentally, Brennan was quite sneaky about paying Halper, paying him inordinate sums to write useless white papers that he never actually wrote. And of course, no one ever read. Again, this was to hide Halper's actual services to the CIA.
Halper approached at least four Trump targets that included Flynn, Carter Page, Sam Clovis was, I believe, another one. Then there was George Papadopoulos. And he was awarded a contract of $411,000 on September 26th of 2016, which is 3 days after the first story about Carter Page appeared in the American press. There was actually a public record, anybody can find it, of contracts awarded to Professor Halper, and he goes on to list them. Through the BAA process, the ONA awarded four contracts to Professor Halper between May 30th, 2012 and September 26th, 2016. The total amount awarded for those four contracts across those 4 years was $1.05 million. And you, ladies and gentlemen, you are going to be very interested to see what he got paid for. Now, I was told by one source, I believe the quote's actually in here, that the ONA, it's a mail drop to pay off spies. There's another source who told us, the Stefan Halper story is ridiculous. He was the consultant to write papers that weren't really papers and paid inflated sums like $400,000. He was conducting bumps and intelligence contacts. So what is the Office of Net Assessment? What do you get paid for? Well, it's a scam. Basically, you get paid to write academic papers. Here's one of them. China, the Three Warfares is one of Halper's papers. You write these papers, and it turns out that what you can do is you can hire somebody who works for a university in India or Indonesia and say, hey, I'll pay you $5,000 if you write 400 pages of whatever, and take that paper, put your own name on it, send it to the Pentagon, and they'll pay you $400,000 for it. They'll pay you the market rate for like a top-level celebrity autobiography for a paper that no one's ever going to read and that you didn't even write. This program stinks to high heaven. It's clearly just a mailbox for paying people off. Halper did this repeatedly. We know that this happened. We know that there were approaches. We know that there were payments. How do we know that? Because, among other things, some of the documents that were declassified in the waning days of the Trump administration were reports about the activities of these folks.
Also in March of 2016, Brennan used MI6 spy Joseph Mifsud to bump George Papadopoulos. As far as I understand, this was the first use of an agent of a foreign intelligence service to bump a Trump associate.
Joseph Mifsud, the Maltese professor who allegedly approached George Papadopoulos and told him a story, allegedly, about information that the Russians had, derogatory information about Hillary Clinton. Well, we were told, who is supposedly a Russian, but really MI6, now, people have speculated about that, but this is the first time that someone's claimed concretely that Joseph Mifsud was working for a Western intelligence agency.
In the piece, their source says that Papadopoulos was chosen because he was an easy mark, but I suspect it was for another reason. Papadopoulos was Trump's foreign policy advisor, so he was living in London, and he was there specifically to liaise with diplomats and various folks on the international political scene. But his placement in London gave Brennan his only really good opportunity to spy on a Trump associate using foreign intelligence agents. So they send in Mifsud to bump Papadopoulos in London. Now, Mifsud gave Papadopoulos this story that the Russians have got dirt on Hillary Clinton. Then, a couple of months later, they send this guy Alexander Downer, an Australian diplomat, to go bump Papadopoulos. In their meeting, Downer gets Papadopoulos to tell him about the dirt that he was told that the Russians have on Hillary. And that was the hook. This is where all of this really took off. Now they've got George Papadopoulos, a Trump associate, saying that he knows about dirt that the Russians have on Hillary Clinton, his boss's political rival. Now everyone is suspicious, the FBI, the news media, and basically everybody who hates Donald Trump. Everyone who wanted to believe this believed it. It was clever, but totally unethical, and totally illegal.
One quick story that George Papadopoulos shared with me back then was that at one point when he was overseas, an official gave him $10,000 and said, here's $10,000. We want to do business with you. We like your research. We want to make sure to work with you. Take the $10,000 because we're going to be working together. He takes the money. He gives it to his lawyer. He realizes who would give anybody $10,000 in a paper bag? You know what I mean? Like, right. So he gives it to his lawyer. He gets on a plane. He goes back home. He goes back home. As soon as his flight lands, FBI agents are on the plane and they're looking for $10,000.
It was a setup.
It was a setup. We knew it was a setup then. But Lee, you lived this with me. Every day I would come in and I would tell you, oh, my God, look what I found out about this Russia collusion story. It's a lie. And then we would get off the air and I was mocked, attacked on social media.
According to the British GCHQ, that's the British NSA, that this is what they said. This is their story. They say that they became aware through incidental collection of suspicious interactions between Trump associates and Russian agents in late 2015. This is what they claim. But this, of course, is total BS. What they're trying to claim here is that they were just spying on Russian agents, as you would expect, nothing unusual there, and then one day, what's this? These Russian agents, they're talking to Trump's people. Well, we'd better report this to US intelligence. But, as I said, this is all bullshit. First of all, the Russians were not talking to Trump associates. That never happened. Secondly, there was nothing incidental about whatever intelligence they did collect. Brennan specifically directed them to spy on that list of 26 Trump associates. This was 100% targeted surveillance. And of course, as I said, the Russian Trump associate contact was a total lie. All right, now I'm going to read directly from the Schellenberger, Taibbi, and Guttentag article. GCHQ first became aware in late 2015 of suspicious interactions between figures connected to Trump and known suspected Russian agents, a source close to UK intelligence wrote a team of reporters for The Guardian on April 2017. This intelligence sharing was supposed to be just the result of incidental collection, reported The Guardian. It is understood that GCHQ was at no point carrying out a targeted operation against Trump or his team, proactively seeking information. The alleged accusations were picked up by chance as part of routine surveillance of Russian intelligence assets. But now, sources say, the GCHQ version of events is false. Instead, the USIC intelligence community asked its foreign allies to target 26 members of Trump's team, possibly to justify the FBI's investigation. They were making contacts and bumping Trump people going back to March 2016, a source close to the investigation said. They were sending people around the UK, Australia, Italy, the Mossad in Italy. The MI6 was working at an intelligence school that they'd set up. The intelligence community, a source said, considered the 26 Trump campaign people identified to bump or reverse target or manipulate through confidential human sources to be easy marks because of their relative inexperience. Doing so was illegal, both because U.S. law prohibits such intelligence gathering unless authorized by a Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act warrant, FISA warrant, and because the weaponization of the intel community for political purposes constitutes election interference. In May of 2018, Trump tweeted out the following. Reports are there was indeed at least one FBI representative implanted for political purposes into my campaign for president. It took place very early on, and long before the phony Russia hoax became a hot fake news story. If true, all-time biggest political scandal. And so it is. According to Glenn Greenwald, in an article posted in The Intercept, he wrote, in response to Trump's tweet, the DOJ and the FBI's various media spokespeople did not deny the core accusation, but quibbled with the language. The FBI used an informant, not a spy, and then began using increasingly strident language to warn that exposing his name would jeopardize his life and those of others, and also put American national security at grave risk. But of course, there was no risk. The FBI was pretending that exposing Stefan Halper as a CIA operative would put him at risk. That was just another lie. Stefan Halper was known publicly as a CIA operative since the 1980s. He was never in any danger. They just didn't want the truth getting out. The media response was sheer ridicule. They laughed at Trump's claims.
So the biggest scandal was when they spied on my campaign. They spied on my campaign.
Well, there's Leslie. No real evidence of that.
Of course there is. No. It's all over the place. Leslie,
sir,
they spied on my campaign and they got caught.
Can I say something? You know, this is 60 Minutes, and we can't put on things we can't verify.
You won't put it on because it's bad for Biden.
But Trump was right. According to Dan Bongino, this whole thing was initially designed to con the FBI. Strange, I know. And I'm citing Dan Bongino a lot in this video because this guy has just been a pit bull in this whole thing. He's been relentlessly digging up and exposing stuff on all of this. According to Dan Bongino, Brennan set this whole thing up to essentially con the FBI to start a surveillance operation on the Trump campaign here in the U.S. The CIA is our intelligence gathering agency overseas. Their only jurisdiction is foreign operations. They cannot conduct surveillance in the U.S. The FBI is the only agency that has license to spy on Americans here in the U.S., and of course, only with a FISA warrant. And so Bongino says that this became Brennan's goal, but he didn't let FBI Director James Comey in on it. Would Comey have cooperated had Brennan let him in on the plot? Maybe. But Brennan wasn't going to risk that. Instead, he set out to create enough smoke that the FBI would think fire.
I will never forget this conversation. My source said to me, Dan, the end of all this was designed to be the FBI, so they would spy on Donald Trump so that the media could write reports about the FBI suspecting Donald Trump of collusion. He said, you have to think of the FBI in this case like a mushroom farm. I said, what does that mean? He said, keep them in the dark and feed them shit. Folks, for as destructive as the FBI was in this case, and believe me, they hated Donald Trump. Jim Comey, I'm telling you, 100%, got played by Brennan. Comey is a vicious, awful, anti-Trump lunatic. But Comey to this day has never told you the true story about the mushroom farm. He is bitter to this day that they got fed a bunch of bullshit and hung out to dry. Oh, believe me, they wanted Trump out. And they were going to do anything to open a case. Even a modicum of ethics would have stopped the FBI early on, and they had none. But I'm telling you, the ringleader of this was Brennan, Obama, and Hillary flushing shit down the pipe into the mushroom farm.
Dan Bongino calls this whole thing an informational laundering operation. And I think that's a great way of putting it, because the Trump spying operation was not merely predicated on a lie. There was a lot of work that went into creating a false narrative that they could then sell as legitimate. A money laundering operation takes dirty money accumulated through crime, stealing or selling drugs or human trafficking or something evil like that, and then great effort is taken to create the illusion that the money was accumulated through a legitimate business, a strip club or a candy store or a car wash or, ironically, a laundromat. Well, this is very similar. They create this false story about Trump colluding with Russia, and then they went to great effort to create the illusion that it was all true, backed up by sources and evidence. An information laundering operation.
My source referred to this early on as a information laundering operation. If I'm going to make up a story about that Giza bank robber, which he's not, but I feel like making up the story and getting the FBI to arrest him, I can go to the FBI and say, Gee robbed the bank. They're going to say, do you have any evidence? Oh, I heard from a friend. The FBI is going to be like, well, when you get some evidence, come back. But what happens if five or six other people walk into the FBI office and go, hey, I know this guy, Gee. I think he robbed a bank. Joe, you think the FBI now is going to say, oh, I think we got something? It's like five or six people. Right. They're going to say, wow, I think we may have something. Here's the thing, folks. None of those five or six people, including me, produced any evidence. They all just walked in and said, hey, I think Gee just robbed a bank. That's exactly what this was.
And so Brennan was laundering this information, creating the illusion that all these lies were legitimate intel. And all of it was targeted at the FBI to get the FBI to open a case, get authority to surveil the Trump team, and hopefully dig up dirt. He wanted to continue and to expand his fishing expedition. A fishing expedition, if you don't know, this is a metaphor for going in and digging around in somebody's life looking for a crime, looking for dirt. They don't have a crime that they suspect the person is guilty of, but they think, oh, he must be guilty of something. And so they get licensed to spy on the person, to raid their home, to look through all their private documents, to go fishing, right? They're fishing for something. And so this is what Brennan wanted to do. He wanted to continue and to expand his fishing expedition. Bongino breaks down the information laundering aspect of this. He breaks it down into a confluence of several channels of intel, all pointing to Trump-Russia collusion, and all set up to con the FBI into opening that case.
John Brennan, Hillary Clinton, and Barack Obama used what my source always called the pipes operation. They fed this information down different pipes, knowing that it would get to gullible idiots in the FBI who would then open up a case. Because why? Because they wanted to. They hated Donald Trump. All they needed was some poking and prodding. But then they never had any evidence. It doesn't matter. They just needed prodding. The pipes were the prodding. Who were the pipes that Brennan flushed this information out? Pipe one, pipe two, pipe three. Where did those pipes end? The FBI, because they were the only ones that had the power to spy domestically on Donald Trump. The only ones.
And we all know that the FBI then did apply for FISA warrants, did get them approved, and did spy on the Trump campaign. Now, I always thought that it was the Clinton campaign that initiated the whole Trump-Russia collusion lie. But Hillary Clinton was just the puppet. Patrick Byrne tried to tell us this years ago, but nobody wanted to listen to him. Now, Hillary Clinton is not blameless, of course. She was very happy to be the puppet, because at the end of the day, she would have gotten to be the president, the first woman president. Hillary Clinton would have been etched into the history books forever. From her perspective, she sold her soul for that one dignity, and it was stripped from her. And so she really thinks that the presidency was stolen from her, but it wasn't stolen by Trump. It was stolen by the American voter. And she was a very eager puppet. Her team jumped right on board the Russian collusion hoax, and they expanded it massively. Her boy, Sidney Blumenthal, concocted the fake intel for the phony dossier, which he then gave to one of Hillary's scummiest hatchet men, Cody Shearer. The Clinton team then hired Christopher Steele and directed him to Shearer, or intermediaries, where Steele then picked up this intel connecting Trump to the Russians.
They couldn't publish the negative research that Shearer and Blumenthal did under Shearer and Blumenthal's names because they were so discredited.
On Trump.
On Trump. So they laundered it through Steele. They found Steele, who had an excellent record as a foreign service person, head of the Russia Bureau at MI6 for a decade. And he had a good relationship with the FBI. And they felt that if they laundered it through Steele and it was presented as Steele's work, there would be a better chance of it being taken seriously. And I believe that most of the dossier was written by Shearer and Blumenthal. First of all, knowing Hillary, they are the class A dirty ops, black ops people she goes to.
And so now it's clear that the Hillary Clinton campaign, that they did not initiate this plan, but they did go along with it, and they massively expanded it. And so that got me to thinking, maybe Hillary Clinton really believes this. Maybe she really believes that Trump colluded with the Russians. And you're probably sitting there and you're thinking, Chris, don't be crazy. Of course, she's in on it. She knows it all. But maybe not. It's possible that she was told by the CIA and the FBI that Trump really is compromised by Russia. I mean, she herself is corrupt. She herself is compromised. And criminals are often paranoid that everybody else is scheming too because they're scheming. Well, if I'm scheming, they must be scheming, right? So I think it's plausible that Hillary is truly convinced that Trump colluded with Russians because she wants to believe it. And she was probably told that this was true by Brennan. I mean, she keeps banging on the same drum even to this day.
And why is Donald Trump so enamored of Putin? Well, part of it is he's a wannabe dictator. He has told us that repeatedly.
And maybe intelligence agents also told this to Nancy Pelosi. Remember her constant bellowing of the question, what does Putin have on Trump?
What do the Russians have on Donald Trump? Politically, personally, or financially?
I don't know what the Russians have on the president politically, personally, financially, or whatever it is.
What is Putin blackmailing President Trump with? Personally, politically, or financially?
And you wonder, what does Putin have on Donald Trump that he always has to be beholden to him, his buddy, his buddy in vileness?
Now, that last clip, that was from last week. Now, I'm not saying that for sure these ditzy broads were tricked by the intel agencies. I mean, for sure, they could themselves be lying. They're both very powerful, corrupt, and deceptive people. However, they both seem to be extremely confident in their pronouncements. And it would actually make a lot of sense that they would have gained that confidence after John Brennan and probably some experts met with them secretly and assured them that Trump was indeed compromised by Putin. The film Layer Cake brilliantly observed that everyone wants to walk through a door marked private.
Everyone likes to walk through a door marked private.
And I can assure you that neither Hillary Clinton nor Nancy Pelosi are immune from this rule. These women love feeling important. And when John Brennan and his intel officers come in and he says, we can assure you Trump is compromised by Putin, his presidency would be the greatest threat to democracy in the history of the United States. Well, these chicks, they're going to eat it up. Heck, this is probably also what happened to Mike Pence. Nobody really understands what happened with Pence. Why would he have turned against Trump? Well, if some respected top-level intel guys came to Pence and fed him that lie, Pence probably believed it.
Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid, Democrat, reportedly believed then-Obama CIA Director John Brennan was feeding him information about alleged links between the Trump campaign and the Russian government in order to make public accusations.
At some point, Obama and Brennan and Hillary, they must have become frustrated that after months of digging, they had found no dirt on Donald Trump. And so then began the media smear campaign. This is when the Steele dossier was leaked to BuzzFeed. The media ran with this story for months, and eventually, as you know, they brought in Robert Mueller as special counsel to investigate Trump's ties to Russia. An investigation that revealed that there was zero collusion, but an investigation that cost taxpayers $32 million. $32 million for an investigation that John Brennan, Jim Comey, Barack Obama, they all knew was baseless. And yet, they let it go forward to keep up the illusion that they really did think that Trump was bad. The investigation revealed no collusion, but they impeached Donald Trump anyway. Why? for looking into the criminal activity of Joe Biden in Ukraine. Criminal activity that actually happened. And then the J6 PSYOP, and then the show trials, and removing Trump from the ballots. And now we find ourselves here today, teetering on the brink of falling into a police state. Now, despite our understanding about all of this stuff, we've still not uncovered everything there is about the plot to spy on Donald Trump and to steal the 2016 election for Hillary. Now, I think there are some very powerful people at the top, the names of which we still do not know. I think there are a lot of crimes that we are not yet aware of. I think Biden, for instance, is probably involved in a variety of ways that we've still not discovered. And we need it all to come out, all of it. I want to know every name, every crime. I want to know everything. But here's where things get interesting. Apparently, Donald Trump is in possession of a binder that contains within it, quote, the roadmap of Russiagate. This is a direct quote from the Schellenberger Taibbi Gutentag article. I would call the binder Trump's insurance policy, said someone knowledgeable about the case. He was very concerned about it and taking it with him because it was the roadmap of Russiagate. And now, I don't think that this is just some intelligence plans that might embarrass John Brennan or some folks in the intelligence community. This binder is, apparently, the entire reason for the raid on Mar-a-Lago.
Your report states the following. Details about the FBI's investigation of the Trump campaign and the raw intelligence related to the intelligence community's illegal surveillance of the Trump campaign are in a 10-inch binder that President Trump ordered to be declassified at the end of his term. So, you know, there is a set of documents that prove that this was a hatchet job by Obama, by Brennan, by Clapper, by Comey. And I had Kash Patel, former assistant director of national intelligence, almost a year ago on my show say, or float this idea, the FBI raid on Mar-a-Lago was to get the binder back, to reclassify it, to deep six it or shred it, so this whole story that you and Michael and Alex have uncovered would never see the light of day. Is that plausible to you? Have you had a secondary confirmation? Talk to us about the binder, Matt.
We have a couple of sources who believe that the Mar-a-Lago raid may and have been motivated, at least in part, by a fear that certain materials got out.
They want that binder back. So now, if this is the roadmap to Russiagate, and considering how hard the FBI and the DOJ have gone after Trump since leaving office, the raid on Mar-a-Lago, the show trials removing his name from the ballots, the attempt to destroy his business, I suspect that this binder is not simply an embarrassing set of intelligence documents. I think this binder contains hard evidence incriminating high-ranking officials in the CIA, the FBI, John Brennan himself, and maybe even Barack Obama. This binder may implicate these people in illegal efforts to interfere with the 2016 election and subvert the democratic process in America. This binder could be the key to saving our republic. Ladies and gentlemen, we need a reckoning. In a country with a corrupt political system, there are two reasons for political trials. One, the corrupt members of the government prosecute their political enemies in order to discredit them and to remove them from contention. Two, the honest members of the government prosecute the corrupt members of the government for actual crimes. Scott Adams posted this very sober assessment to X the other day. My best guess is that about 100 people need to be jailed for a multi-year criminal conspiracy to subvert our elections. Two presidents, dozens of staffers, several senators, Soros prosecutors hunting Trump, half the media, all signers of the laptop hoax, and on and on. It's a long list. And that's why it won't happen. Instead, Republicans will be jailed for noticing. Scott is a bit nihilistic here, but I can understand why. What we've seen in America for far too long is a hesitation among Republicans to indict, prosecute, and convict Democrat and corrupt rhinos for their crimes because they don't want to be perceived as corrupt members of the government persecuting their political enemies. However, the time for concerns about public perception are over. The crimes of our corrupt government officials have become too grave. The cancer must be cut away from Washington, D.C., and I hope that the evidence that we need is in that binder. But we can't just give it to reporters and hope that America cares. No, we need to use that evidence to prosecute these criminals. Now, it's possible that Trump doesn't even have this binder. This is just speculation. But it makes a lot of sense. Raiding Mar-a-Lago clearly exposed the corruption of the FBI. That's a pretty bold thing to do for these people. I mean, typically, the corrupt DC swamp dwellers, they want to hide their corruption. They don't like it broadcast to the world. But in the case of the Mar-a-Lago raid, they did just that. So that raid had to have a very strong impetus. And so I think that this speculation about the binder is right. I think that the CIA and the FBI and other powerful players involved, I think that they truly believe that Trump has taken this binder or a copy of the binder. And if so, they are done. And I also think that they didn't find it because they've gone scorched earth ever since Trump left office. He has been unjustly indicted in four separate cases with 91 spurious charges filed against him. These people are not messing around. They are furious. They are desperate. And I believe it may well be because Trump has this binder. So when Trump gets back into office, we go nuclear on these bastards. And what if Trump doesn't have the binder? Fine. Give all the top reporters that have reported on this story top security clearances. Bongino, Bartiromo, Tucker, Peter Schweitzer, John Solomon, Molly Hemingway, Miranda Devine, Julie Kelly, Sarah Carter, Schellenberger, Taibbi Guttentag, and of course, my good friend Sebastian Gorka. And I know I left out a ton of people, but you get the idea. Let them search the records wherever they are. Dig through whatever documents that they need to dig through in order to bring these documents to the desk of Donald Trump, who could then declassify them, release them to the news media, and use them to indict and prosecute every one of the bastards involved in this scandal. Even if the binder doesn't have the evidence we need, fine. We make a new binder. But look, if Trump does have the binder and it does have the evidence that we hope that it has, I think he's keeping that binder very safe, waiting until he is in the most powerful position possible to use it. You got to remember, Trump is a master negotiator. He knows that he needs to be in a position of power to negotiate the best deal. And if he wants to do some real good, prosecute the corrupt bastards in D.C., put them all behind bars. He knows that he needs to be the president of the United States of America. And maybe he's already using the binder as a negotiating tool. Maybe this binder is his leverage against his political enemies. I've often speculated that D.C. works on the principle of mutually assured destruction, like a circle of dominoes, a house of cards. Everyone's got dirt on everyone else. But if someone in D.C. were to have dirt on everyone else, and no one else had dirt on them, well, then that person would wield a lot of power. Consider this. An honest man who had dirt on everyone in D.C. would be the most targeted man in the history of America. And what do we have now? The most targeted man in the history of America. And so maybe that's what Trump's doing. Maybe Trump has joined the game, so to speak. Maybe this binder is Trump's insurance policy. Maybe this binder is the only reason Donald Trump is still alive. I cannot wait until Trump is back in office. Because if people don't go to prison this time, the Republic dies. The criminals in D.C. already believe that they can get away with anything. And keep in mind, we don't know all their names. We will never probably know all the names of everyone who is involved or all the crooked players in D.C. But if a good number of them are arrested, tried, and convicted to go to prison for a long, long time, then the others, they start to realize that could have been them. The next time they want to spy on a campaign or unjustly prosecute a candidate or steal an election, they're going to have to think twice. The only way we save the Republic is by putting a lot of people in prison. Well, that's it for me. Let me know what you guys think in the comment section below. And remember, it's not that the liberal friends are ignorant. It's just they know so much. That is not so. Good night.
We're at war with the most dangerous enemy that has ever faced mankind in his long climb from the swamp to the stars. And it's been said if we lose that war, and in so doing lose this way of freedom of ours, history will record with the greatest astonishment that those who had the most to lose did the least to prevent its happening. If we lose freedom here, there's no place to escape to. This is the last stand on earth.